There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
Right from your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Oh, yeah! They say it's not sexual, but it is sexual.
It's totally and sexual.
And the ASMR videos are horrible, because it's just a woman going,
just gonna go.
I'm rock hard. I love it. Wow. All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everybody. I am Ben Gizzle. In studio with me is Marcus Parks.
Hey, hey.
And in a far, far land away, a far, far, far land, in a land far away. Boom.
Starting from the bottom, now we're here. Starting from the bottom, now we're here in Antarctica. Starting from the bottom, and we're here. God, it's cold. You know what I wish we did? I wish we left the metal helmets back in Germany, because it's like, I've got penguin shit just frozen to the side of my fucking helmet, and I'm sick of being in Antarctica. So, but, you know, I just love that song by Drake. It's just too bad we had to kill him in Auschwitz.
Oh, it's not something you should do to Drake.
Well, you don't think Drake wouldn't be the first one in line that they had put, like, regretfully, a tear running down Herman Hesse's face as they just took Drake and was like, I'm sorry, you're just all the wrong mix. You're all the wrong mix. I'm sorry, Drake.
All right, so we've had some fairly light episodes dealing with 9/11, so let's get to some serious stuff. Today,
because that's the thing, is that it's just been, technically it's been too real, but, you know, in the end, it could have been even more real if we wanted to. You guys didn't even know. We were at a 7. We could have taken it up to all the way to a 19. You guys wanted to be fucked up for the rest of your life? We could have done that, but we didn't. We held back.
Well, we did play videos of towers collapsing as people screamed and cried.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We held back.
That was pretty intense, I thought. But
we could have played 4 or 5.
Oh, okay.
We could have played all the ones that I forced myself to listen to, but we didn't. So,
we're moving on.
Think about how solid the bedrock of your relationship is now. Think about the testing it did. It's like when you test, like, when they take office chairs out and they get fat people to jump up and down on them.
I don't think they do that.
I'm still apologizing as of 2 days ago.
Heil Hitler, that is just great news.
Okay, so we can say we're talking about the hollow earth today.
Yes, we are. We're talking about the hollow earth. A lot of the book research from today's episode, this is a great book. It's called Weird Science and Bizarre Beliefs by Dr. Gregory L. Reese. It's kind of this guy goes across the country and he covers a lot of the weird phenomenon that people in America believe in. He goes through Bigfoot, cave people, cryptids. It's a really fun book. I would absolutely recommend getting
it. We all agree cave people existed, right?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, but did they live in caves? More like,
Those aren't words.
See, that's all you have to do to be a conspiracy theorist. You just have to sort of insinuate, and then you let other people fill it in.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because I had them, like, living in some bizarre coconut home.
Exactly. Spin the tail out. Make the tail more interesting. The hollow earth theory, I think, is very interesting. It's because along the lines of hollow moon, where in order to believe that the earth is truly hollow, you have to either be from the 1800s or deeply, deeply upset about being fired from Burger King and are now getting a crossbow to go back to the Burger King. You know what I mean? Because you're like, y'all been hot and fries in the goddamn center of the earth, and just starting being like, p-ping, 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 and, you know, and like people just, you know, and then Shanisha just got 2 arrows sticking out of her tits.
Beautiful woman, though. Beautiful. I love it. Love her.
Didn't deserve a single bit of it.
And Burger King does have some killer fries. They do. They redid the recipe.
So let us actually start in the 1800s with John Cleve Symmes Jr.
Is it Symmes or is it Sims?
I think it's whatever you want it to be, Henry. He's from 1818.
I think and then you probably would pronounce it John Cleve Symmes Jr.
John Cleve, he was from St. Louis, Missouri, and he began his Hollow Earth career in 1818 by sending out a press release to
each notable foreign government, reigning prince, legislature, city, college, and philosophical society quite around the earth.
And here's what that press release said.
I declare the world is hollow and habitable within. I pledge my life in support of this truth and my marriage and the end of any friendship I've ever had. And I'm ready to explore the hollow if this world will support and aid me in this undertaking. I ask, 100 brave companions, well-equipped, to start from Siberia in the fall season. That's the coldest, worst time to start in Siberia. With reindeer and sleighs, much like Santa Claus. But if Santa Claus was a big fat loser, I engage we find a warm and rich land, stocked with thrifty vegetables and animals, if not men. And oh, good Lord, I hope there's men. God, I hope... The full torso of men, deep inside the belly of our precious, precious earth.
I would go on that journey. That sounds amazing.
So a quote-unquote novelized version of Sims Theory called Simsonia described the people in the Earth's core as extremely attractive, gentle vegetarians with beautiful white skin, great intelligence, and little need for sleep.
So yeah, and they just have a lot. It's like also the mustache wax flows naturally from the green mountainside, and lo, Yola Tengo is president.
I will say, if you're somebody who identifies solely as a person who has great facial hair, you got to get another hobby. I watched that show Beard Wars. Sad guys. Oh. Sad guys.
Because what happens if you get gum stuck in there?
Well, you got to shave.
Your life's over.
Yeah, it's all done.
So in this quote-unquote novelized version of the theory,
you're saying that this is the fake version of the theory, right?
No, quote-unquote novelized. And we're going to hear
what
that.
What does that mean? Why is it still quote-unquote novelized?
Quote-unquote novelized. We're going to hear that a lot in this story, is that these people, what they did is they did actually have some knowledge of the Hollow Earth, but certain people took certain artistic liberties with it, or the people themselves put out these possibly true stories under the guise of fiction to get into the world's subconsciousness. And much like a 9/11, if you know what to look for, you're going to know he's talking to you.
So you're talking about dirty, soiled pamphlets handed out by men in stinky wool suits screaming about how the earth is hollow, right? And that these were the novelized things.
Well,
and he was just like, I seem to have found this book. And oh, you will be quite scandalized by the nature of what's going on inside our very earth. There's nude, attractive men. And God knows how many Papa Johns will be there. Get excited. Free pamphlet.
It's in a pamphlet. I mean, you can't not trust a pamphlet.
Oh, yeah, man. According to a pamphlet I got in Times Square the other day, the Earth is going to end here in about a week.
That's great.
Actually, it's going to end the same day that Heroes premieres on NBC, Henry.
No way. But wait a minute. I hope it's not before 8 p.m. because we need those Nielsen numbers in. And actually, what's really important is that if we could actually move the end of the Earth to the 27th, the +3 on the rating scale really helps us.
I'll make a pamphlet about it. I'll cancel out that pamphlet with my own pamphlet. Boom. That's how pamphlet wars work.
So in this quote-unquote novelized version, Sim said that these people underneath the earth traveled through these cavernous underground areas using airships powered by, quote, elastic gas, and claimed that the surface world that we inhabited was actually populated by the descendants of exiled criminals from the Hollow Earth, making our entire planet equivalent to Australia.
The rapists of Australia.
Yep.
I find that very, I don't know why I find that insulting, because Australia seems like it would be nice, but it is the progeny of rapists, right, Marcus?
Well, not only that, but it's also a nightmare land full of inhospitable terrain and animals that would just as soon kill you as look at you.
Some great
fans. They have a 7-foot-tall chicken bird that can eviscerate your guts with just a swipe of its foot. We're supposed to live there?
It's a beautiful place. You know, a boomerang, that's something you throw and it comes back to you. So you can imagine how fun that weapon is.
A boomerang is literally the example of if you love something, let it go.
Right. Yeah. And if it comes
and
back.
And if it loves you, it'll come back to
you. You've been having sex with a boomerang.
You've been having sex with a boomerang.
You can't just come on all the boomerang that's not a wife.
Oh, that's why I'm all scraped at the top of my shift.
Yep.
Oh. I also want... I should have... did this as a caveat at the very beginning of the show.
Yeah.
If you are not red eyeballed stone right now. You're not going to find this show half as fascinating as it should be. This whole show is sort of like, every one of these theories reminds me of like the cartoon version of The Little Prince. You know what I mean? Where it's a little like, I'm not kind of trippy, where it's like when you see like nude French boys with no pubes, like dealing with like pink aliens and stuff like that, it's that kind of trippy. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is before you start, like stop the show right now if you have not smoked yet and just fucking roll up a boy's leg worth of the finest Parisian tumbleweed and fucking spark it to your face, because it's going to get a lot trippier than this.
Do not Google nude French pubeless boys talking with pink aliens, however. You will go to jail like Jared Fogle.
So the second well-known Hollow Earth believer didn't show up until decades later in 1869. Speaking of the end of the world, this guy Cyrus Teed, he was a millennium doomsday preacher, just like the people that we got at the end of the 20th century saying that the world was going to end on, you know, January 1st, 2000. Cyrus Teed was one of the guys that said it was going to end on January 1st, 1900. He claimed that he was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
Oh. Completely reasonable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he was possibly, before our friend David, he actually took the name of Koresh.
Oh.
And he established a commune in Florida.
Oh, it's so nice in Florida because beautiful. It's so, the humidity makes it so that my joints don't hurt. And also, you know, the moon is hollow. You got to see my grandson. He's a dentist.
1869 Florida. What would that have been like?
A lot like 1997 Florida. Just a bunch of people in tank tops, all sunburned with random lotion on their noses.
Absolutely. Well, it's just Native Americans and Cubans hanging out. I bet it's pretty fucking randy down there.
Yeah.
I bet it would.
I bet it's fun down there, and there's a bunch of snakes and stuff, and you got natural swamps, and you got a bunch of stuff like that. I bet, it's real foreign to anywhere else you'd be in America. You know what I mean? Because where is he from? Is he also from St. Louis, Missouri?
can you ride an alligator?
Yeah, because it's probably like, look, it's moon lizards. Mm-hmm.
So Teed believed that the Earth was a hollow ball with humanity residing on the inside.
Suck yeah, man.
Inside. All of us living on the concave surface rather than the convex, i.e. the inside of the spoon rather than the outside of the spoon.
Yeah, dude. I fucking believe that shit, man. I think about it all the time, man. I'm like, we're on the outside of the fucking world, man. And the fucking, it's spinning, right? Okay, think about it, man. The world's fucking spinning, man. Why are we still on it, dude? Have you ever tried to fucking sit on a chair with your buddy fucking spinning on it, man? You fall out of that shit. We're inside of the shit. And the fucking sky is the fucking picture, man. Some dude came and painted it. Fucking Michael Cera fucking painted it with a rolling pin. Man.
No, dude. I'm about to fucking blow your mind even further. No dude painted it on the sky. The sky is not painted. The sky exists. For what happens is the sun, the moon, and the stars all live on the convex side, that's the outer spoon, of a smaller globe inside the hollow earth, making the quote-unquote heavens the center of the quote-unquote universe. So
totally buy it.
All of the universe is contained within a ball, a smaller ball, inside the ball of the earth that we live in right now.
It's actually more confusing than gravity. It's more confusing than the truth.
I'm just saying it's totally true, and it's what I've been saying at bus stops for years. And I'm glad we finally reported it here on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Cyrus Teed, he wrote in his pamphlet, The Cellular Cosmogony, in 1898, 2 years before he thought the world would end, that to believe in the convexity of the earth, that would be the outer spoon theory of the earth, was to deny God and all of his works.
Deny God?
Deny God!
And he wrote this in a pamphlet?
In the Cellular Cosmogony. Yikes.
So his Cellular Cosmogony, which is a word that he fucking made up.
Right.
If you defy that, the word that he made up in a pamphlet that he handed to you while you were probably busy doing other shit, and you're also dealing with four other Hollow Earth pamphlets at the time, because it's 1880s, he thought that you just denied the power of God himself.
Yes, he thought that to not believe in the concavity of Earth, that would be the inside spoon theory of Earth, and not to not believe, because he believed that that ball in the center of the Earth, that was where the heavens lay. That's where heaven was. And to not believe in that was to deny that God existed, because you denied where God existed, then you denied that God existed himself.
And, you know, not a lot of people could read or write during the 1800s, so technically this guy was smart.
Technically, yeah. He printed a whole pamphlet.
Yeah.
Most of these people were still like being like, what are pants? I'm new to pants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they were wearing their hats on their feet. 1880s were crazy.
They were crazy. Yeah.
You know, I'm just glad that we all live inside the Earth, and that gay people are actually snakes with human skin on them, and that our planet is totally fine, and we're headed into a hot... It's more of a vacation zone. Mm. It's not global warming. It's becoming Hawaii everywhere.
Yeah. Well, let's give the people of the 1800s a little bit of credit. While many people dismiss Cyrus Teed's ideas out of hand, it took a couple of decades for somebody to really take his ideas seriously. There was one man in particular who took them to heart, Mr. Adolf Hitler.
Wait a second. You mean Adolf, the reasonable one, Hitler, believed that the Earth was hollow? That's crazy.
Well, he threw a lot of spaghetti at the wall to see what stuck, you know?
Yeah. What I like about him is that he really just, like, he mixed it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, again, like Michael Jordan. Where it's like, yes, when he couldn't jump from the free throw line anymore, he made the fadeaway. Mm-hmm. You know, he started working the fadeaway because he knew he had to be a champion.
Yeah.
That was what Hitler did.
That's when he would make
all the Jews.
He did make a lot of fadeaways. you're an expert.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air fadeaways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Hitler, what he did about Cyrus Teed's theory, he supposedly had his scientists calculate exactly on the Earth where one could look straight up with a telescope and see what the British Navy was up to on the opposite side of the Earth.
Now, can you imagine being the person who had the sign, having to listen to Hitler explain to you what he's doing? It's like, you will make a telescope that will look up into the mirror world of the sky and will see on the other side. It will see on the other side what the British people are doing, because I know we live inside a golf ball. And he's like, this is a great idea. We all agree. It's a great idea. Great. We all agree. Everyone. You love it, Sven, right? Thumbs up, Sven, right? If we could just maybe not do it to the cans?
But that's the genius of Hitler. He was so crazy, he went with the hollow Earth, and then his next ideas of, like, why don't we attack the Russians? They're like, we can attack the Russians. We can do that.
And that's the problem. That's why Hitler lost, because his super crazy ideas were overshadowed by his super crazy ideas.
Right.
So they just kind of gave him whatever he wanted as far as invading Russia in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be, if I'm ever a Hollywood star, I will be doing the same exact tactic. You come in with a really crazy idea.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, let's do a movie about toaster strudels. And they have to, like, you know, you have like a big, like, sort of like movie deal with Warner Brothers. And then they'd be like, okay, yeah, we can make a movie about toaster strudels. And then eventually be like, actually, I just want to make a story about a coming of age story about a boy with no feet.
And then 2 years later, boom, he's thanking his mother on the Oscars.
I love it. That's great. But who's the boy with no feet?
That's, you know who it is, Ben?
Who?
It's you, buddy.
Oh my God.
You're the boy with no feet.
Oh.
And you know what? I am the jumping coach that believed in you. Because it's set in the future, in the year 3075, where just jumping's a sport because everybody's so fat.
Right.
So besides Cyrus Teed and Mr. Sims, there were a few other Hollow Earth proponents throughout the years. There was the 1800s and 1900s, the 19th and 20th century. This is what we can call the golden age of the Hollow Earth. there were a lot of people out there handing out pamphlets.
Yeah. There was a lot of dumb shit happening in the late 1800s.
A lot of phrenology, things such as that. They were still kind of believing in humors and medieval barbers and bleeding people out.
Right.
Yeah, and all of these ignorant ideas that were made in the 1880s were essentially the things that planted the seed for what eventually become the Nazi Party. Every one of these theories became like something that they could be like, and then magical white people live there. Every single, like, every hollow earth theory involves magical white people living in the center of the earth. And then Hitler had the idea, and it's like, instead of going and finding some magical white people, what if we were the magical white people? So what if there, but Mr. Hitler, what if there was, I mean, I don't want to step any toes, but if, what if we go there and there are already magical white people there, so we take them to the camps. Anybody who's inside this earth is just a, is a hollow earth Jew. You're some kind of cave Jew.
Well, that seems inappropriate, I think.
So the other guys, you know, Willis George Emerson, he wrote in 1908 a quote-unquote novel.
Why are you quote-unquoting? Was it a novel?
No, well, it was released as a novel.
So it's a novel.
It was not necessarily.
Novels based upon true ideas. The whole idea is that they're, what they're doing is like secret societies have been doing from the very beginning. What they try to do is say it's a quote-unquote, it has to be a quote-unquote novel. Because the idea is that true secrets are bedded within the novel in order to get it past the fucking government, man.
Yeah. Like that movie Pure Luck with Martin Short. They predicted the bees would begin to die.
Really?
Do you remember when the bee stung Martin Short, his face swelled up?
I do remember that.
Public enemy number one, the bee. So then when they start to die in populations, die in thousands and millions at a time, we won't care because we'll remember what they did to Danny Glover's friend.
Tell me a second. Are you the only person on the Pure Luck Martin Short, like, community boards online, all the web boards, where you just complete these long two-page things about how Pure Luck with Martin Short predicted the bee shortage?
I do have a pamphlet, and I'd like to hand it out to you as soon as I see you next, Henry.
All right, but after the show, we need to talk about merging your Pure Luck Yahoo group with my Clifford Yahoo group.
Great.
We'll double our numbers.
Okay, perfect.
I think that's really important. I have a whole Yahoo group about toaster strudels that I have been prepping. It's the beginning, I think, the seeds of a movie. It's a quote-unquote novel.
Perfect.
So in this quote-unquote novel called The Smoky God.
Yeah, man, fuck it, dude. Fuck yeah, dude. It's all I'm fucking saying. I don't know what he's fucking thinking, dude.
The Smoky God told the story of Olaf Janssen, who described this story to the author while Olaf was 95 years old as the Swede laid on his deathbed. For you see, Olaf waited until he was 95 to tell his story in full, because for years, every time he tried to tell the story of the Smoky God, they kept throwing him in the mental institution.
Oh, come on.
Every time I try to tell my most insidious story of the inside Hollow Earth, they try to take my lederhosen.
Oh, leave the man's lederhosen.
Because that's what they do if they put you in jail in Sweden, is they just take your lederhosen. You don't go to a room.
No.
You're just nude from the waist down. You're wearing your weird tunic thing that they're only allowed to wear in Sweden. That's the only clothes they're allowed to wear.
Yeah.
And they take their very stiff shorts from them.
I wore lederhosen as a child, and I wore it to school when I was 8 years old one day.
And how did that work out?
Not good. Turns out not the cultural attire of the United States.
Yeah, because I could just see 6'5", 9-year-old Ben.
Yeah, it was about right, yeah.
With soiled lederhosen on.
Well, they were clean until about the afternoon.
I was from Germany.
So Janssen's story reported that he and his father sailed far north on a fishing expedition from Sweden until they suddenly came upon a tropical climate where they were approached by a large ship filled with giants singing and playing harps. And the giants took Olaf and his father over the curve of the Earth's outer shell, That's the outside of the spoon. And into the hollow interior, where they saw, among other things, great herds of elephants, 100 feet long, 85 feet high. Olaf described the herd of elephants thusly.
There must have been 500 of these thunder-throated monsters, and they're relentlessly waving trunks.
Thunder-throated monsters, restlessly waving trunks.
Yeah, between...
I don't know why, I just see just fucking the hugest naked Swedish women. Just big tube titties, just like slapping back and forth, like running around the best. Like, I find it rude that he called us a herd of elephants.
So for this next little tidbit, we want to thank our new official Last Podcast Science Officer, Megan Fierro Root.
Okay.
And we're also going to give out her email. And so from now on, what we'd want to do is that if you have a single fucking problem with any of the science on Last Podcast on the Left, please address our new science officer, Megan Fierro Root.
Is this technically a science episode?
There's science in it.
I thought it was a pamphlet.
Every episode is a science episode.
Everything is science, Ben.
Oh, okay.
Everything.
Got it.
And concerning the science behind the size of these creatures, remember, 100 feet long, 85 feet high, the science behind that is that Earth's gravity exists primarily on the surface of the planet. You dig? You get me?
I dig.
And there is substantially lower gravity in the subterranean levels of the planet. Once you get inside the planet,
right,
the deeper you get, the lesser the gravity is, especially if you're on the inside spoon part of the planet. They're pulling right out. They're pushing it. One part's pulling out. One part is pushing in. It's about half the gravity of the surface.
So is it like a Salvador Dali type situation? Everyone's stretched out and kind of strange looking?
They get bigger.
Yeah, they get bigger because they're allowed to grow bigger. You'd be 7'2" down there.
Hey, all right.
I'd be 6'7". Henry would be the same size.
5'8".
I'd be the same size because I would be king. And I would be living in a plastic gravity-less ball where I, when everyone was like, you are all my subjects. I am the king of the inner earthland. And I'll call it Nusablauskaland.
So you get it, right?
It makes all the sense in the world.
Completely true.
Technically, this is logical.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if you have no gravity, then yeah, you would things would expand.
You get taller. Many science fiction novels have told me this. They talk about it at length in Hyperion and the Fall of Hyperion.
Sure.
Very good stuff. Yeah, Lucis. Mm-hmm. You know, because people in gravity, but there's more gravity, so they're more compact. So,
yeah.
And they're stronger than that. And also, it's seven travelers going to visit the Shrike, and the Shrike destroys all but one of the pilgrims, and then he gives that program all the wishes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just many, there's a big interconnected sort of computer thing. It's a big story. It's a good book.
Yeah.
Usually, science conversations don't involve pilgrims receiving wishes. Usually, there's like numbers, and then someone's like, we don't know, but we're trying to figure it out.
There are numbers. Seven go, one gets a wish. Oh, those are numbers, Ben.
Those are numbers. Can't argue with that.
So while we will cover more of the modern science of the Hollow Earth, because it doesn't end in 1908. You know, okay. It doesn't end there.
No.
There are still people to this day that do believe, very vigorously believe, that the moon, that the Earth is hollow, including a one Mr. Dallas Thompson. We'll cover Mr. Dallas Thompson in a future bonus episode. Oh. So those bonus episodes are going to start coming out here in a month or so once we start getting the subscription service going. So watch out for that. What we do have today is the testimony of a Hollow Earth YouTube scientist. Right now in the year 2015. Uh-huh. He released this in April, Ben.
Okay. This is the modern day pamphlet. The YouTube short.
I'm going to say that this video is a documentary I watched called Hollow Earth, The Biggest Cover-Up.
The Hollow Earth, The Biggest Cover-Up, Special Edition.
Special Edition. Oh. I'm sorry, because it's true, because the first one is only 45 minutes, and this one's an hour, 7 minutes. Of, I would say, what is the term? Well, how would you say, Marcus? Impenetrable nonsense? Guess per usual?
I would say probably indecipherable gobbledygook might be more accurate.
Yes, again, the man who made this video, play it.
All right, let's hear it.
Here we have a rotating sphere of water about 25 millimeters in diameter, and inside this sphere are a whole bunch of little tiny air bubbles. And we will see what the angular acceleration due to rotation does to these air bubbles as a function of time. What you are observing are the bubbles moving to the center axis of rotation. As a function of time, they will form this rather tightly packed bubble core.
An hour and
7 minutes. These bubbles are kept from coalescing from a small amount of added surfactant to the water.
Surfactant.
What?
Here we have a rotating sphere filled with bubbles and tea leaves, and as expected, the bubbles go to the center and the tea leaves go to the outside edge, along with a few chunks of orange peel.
Logic. Very scientific. He's using the scientific method right now.
You can see the bubble in it. There's a bubble on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Here we have a rotating sphere with bubbles and chunks from breaking up a small vitamin tablet, and the bubbles go to the center core, but the vitamin chunks seem to stay in their location, dispersed through the sphere, and from this we deduced that the vitamin chunks have a density near that of water.
Yeah. An hour and 7 minutes of this.
See, that's what you call variables.
He's using the
scientific method here. He uses orange peels. He uses crushed up vitamins. Mm-hmm. He has proved his point, Ben.
Well, I'm definitely getting convinced, and I'm really envious of this man, because truly, if you love looking at bubbles, you can never be bored.
You can never be bored.
He beat boredom.
He did it by making himself the most dull human that's ever lived.
Right. Oh, yes, definitely had to do that. Yeah.
You just have to take your enjoyment of life down to about a zero.
Just right at
the... And then, like anything, then you just slap in 2 sugar packets together.
Oh, yeah.
We'll make you happy for an hour and a half.
Yeah, he would love solitary confinement. He's the only one that could actually put on a show he would enjoy.
So tell me, did you bring your own lunch to work like I did? I always bring my own lunch to work, and I've got a thermos in there, and it's got some water in it with some bubbles in it that have some vitamin tablets and orange peel in it. Looking forward to lunch. What did you bring today? It took me 23 minutes to walk from my house to the train, and then the train takes 42 minutes to get to the station next to the office, and it takes about 6 minutes for me to walk from this station. Where are you going? I just have no one. The earth is hollow. When I get down inside the earth, that's where I will have friends. Friends that also like the balls with the orange peel and the vitamin tablet in them.
Well, now I want to cry a little bit. It's too real. That was the most real thing too real has ever done.
Yeah, that was truly too real.
But you know, but the sadness that we project onto these people, in reality, folks who are that sort of type, they really love their life. And actually, they're very mean people. They're the ones who say the meanest things on Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, my God. We've got one guy on Twitter that is a true hollow moon enthusiast, true believer. He listens to every single episode multiple times, but goddamn does he hate us.
Well,
he's
technically
our biggest fan.
I think
the thing
so.
About these guys that do believe, that's what it is. They're not sad. They're mad. They're hoping the Hollow Earth exists, because then they can go there. Then they don't have to go to the office anymore. They don't have to pretend to have a good time at the Bennigans when they're hanging out with their office mates when everybody gets apple teenies on Fridays at 5:30.
Oh, I love a good apple teeny.
I bet you do.
But a lot of the people who believe the Earth is hollow, I've also seen a lot of them think the Earth is flat. So how does that work?
Well, once we get to Dallas Thompson on the bonus episode, we will see that some believe that the entrance to the hollow Earth that's up at the North Pole and at the South Pole, but also some in Argentina, it is not actually a physical hole, but rather a dimensional portal.
There's a lot of people who talk about that, and also that the hollow Earth points at both the poles are about how the Earth is a living organism with its own kundalini line, and that the holes on the poles are the two chakra points. It's the head chakra and the root chakra, which is the asshole chakra.
Yeah.
And the asshole chakra is where all, like, that's the bigger one. in Antarctica, the big old gaping one that the aliens coming in and out of. But it's not really aliens. It's sort of like an interdimensional fucking port or something like that. Mm-hmm. Again, I have never smoked the amount of weed that I needed to fully understand that theory.
The butthole's a root chakra?
Don't even think about it. You've never seen yoga videos. That's all I do. If I want to learn about that kind of stuff, I just watch hours of just women stretching in tight pants.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't see the root.
You can.
Well, it's gonna look.
You watch
close.
The nude yoga videos.
Uh-huh.
They're quite. Have you ever
nude yoga videos?
They're quite good.
No.
So, possibly the most famous of all Hollow Earth explorers was the one Mr. Robert Byrd of the U.S. Navy, Robert Byrd Jr. You know, he is actually a reasonably credible individual, reasonably so. He won a Medal of Honor.
Mm-hmm. Which you think would mean you're reasonable.
Yeah, in World War I, won a Medal of Honor.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
And he also aided Charles Lindbergh with his flight training. Although, it must be noted that Robert Byrd Jr. was a Freemason.
Okay.
False flag. That's what I have to say. I'm just going to say the term false flag. Robert Byrd is this whole storyline is very interesting. I'm going to say this: all the conspiracy theories that were attached to Robert Byrd have nothing to do with Robert Byrd. It happened after the fact. They just said he's like he had a secret diary, but he was like 97 years old. Like he's like, I don't believe in inner thoughts. I believe in actions. They're like, no, you had a diary, Mr. Byrd. He's like, I'm Admiral Byrd. You're Mr. Byrd now because your fucking dick fell off, all right? So you just shut your fucking mouth and die of cancer, Robert Byrd.
So in 1920...
Don't ever work in a nursing home, Henry. And never just... Don't be around the elderly.
So in 1928, aided by Edsel Ford, Henry Ford's son, that's another little specious connection, and John D. Rockefeller Jr., that's another suspect connection.
Of course it's all these inbred nepotism-filled pieces of garbage. Smart people have dumb children.
Aided by them, along with $400,000 in donations from the American public, Byrd was able to establish the first base on Antarctica, called Little America. And by the way, $400,000 in 1928 money, in 2015 money, that is $5,582,175.44.
44 cents is the kicker.
Yeah.
Yep, that makes the deal.
Yeah. That's the kicker right there. That's the straw.
He could get a full brownstone in Brooklyn for that. Or... create Little America in Antarctica.
Yeah.
Basically, Rockefeller sent them out over there because, as we know, he wanted them just to collect a bunch of fucking penguins so they could carve them up and make a bunch of fake pussies out of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because John D. Rockefeller, eventually the Rockefeller that was convicted of murder not too long ago, early investor in the Fleshlight, because he was actually fulfilling a previous dream of his grandfather that was started with Little America in Antarctica.
Okay, you gotta see, all right, 1928, see? And John is trying to say the rape is gonna be illegal, see? So what we gotta do, all right? I know. Every time I look at any sort of thing walking, whether it's a dog or a deer or a woman, I wanna fuck it. So what we gotta do is make something called a fake vagina. We gotta make a fake vagina so I can use it at my convenience. You know what I'm saying? Snorting my breakfast powder. I'm smoking a cigar at 6 o'clock in the morning.
So Admiral Byrd, after the establishment of Little America, would make three more expeditions to the Antarctic, including participation in the mysterious Operation High Jump in 1946. Now, Operation High Jump supposedly was to map the coastline of Antarctica and the interior, and to test equipment, military equipment, in sub-zero temperatures. But if that was true, if that's all they were doing, then why did they take 4,700 men, 13 ships, including an aircraft carrier, and 25 airplanes?
I'll tell you why, Marcus. Because they were there to kill one Mr. Adolf Hitler, who was still alive,
yes!
Living in a house made out of penguin skin.
Seems like a lot. He's just one fat old dude.
Well, we'll get more to that later about why they needed 4,700. Because Hitler was not there alone.
Well, maybe they tethered them all together and then they had a big like party train. That's kind of fun to do with boats if you ever go on the lake there. Tie your boats together and then you can walk from boat to boat. Kind of
he just showed up to go destroy the last of the Nazi raid over that's happening in Antarctica. And they're like, guys, we know that we did bad shit in the past, but now we are here. We're just hanging out. We're just enjoying ourselves, having ourselves a Coors Light, and just we're just being chill. We're being cool. And they're like, you're right. And then it turned into a Bud Light commercial where it was just them playing beach balls inside of the inner like Hawaii land that's inside of Antarctica.
So in the 1970s, a few decades after Operation High Jump, and long after Admiral Byrd had gone to Antarctica for the last time, a mysterious document called The Inner Earth, My Secret Diary, was leaked to the public. And in that, we find a detailed account written by Admiral Byrd himself of his experiences with the Hollow Earth phenomenon on February 19th, 1947. Now, some believe that Byrd merely flew over the North Pole on that date, but the diary tells a much different story. It says that Byrd actually flew into the core of the Earth itself, traveling 1,700 miles over mountains, lakes, rivers, green vegetation, and animal life before he encountered something even more mysterious.
And you know it's real because all top secret documents are named My Secret Diary. Please don't read this. If you do, you're going to learn the truth.
Yeah. And it's all like, you know, the problem is that, yes, at 11:30 hours, it starts with his trip through the inner hollow earth and the secret paradise there. But at 10:90 hours, he was just like, I wonder if Julie likes Bobby. But I look at Julie and I think, I like Julie. But then I watch Julie watching Bobby, and I get sad, because I think Julie likes Bobby.
She always does.
So this is from Admiral Byrd's secret diary, 11:30 hours.
Off our port and starboard wings are a strange type of aircraft. They're closing rapidly alongside. They are dish-shaped and have a radiant quality to them. They're close enough now to see the markings on them. Oh. It's a type of swastika.
A type of swastika, Ben.
What type? Isn't there just one type?
There's many different types of swastikas.
There's a regular swastika. There's the inverted swastika. There's the rigid swastika.
But it's all
there's
the swastika.
Comic Sans swastika.
But if you're laying down Marcus, you're still Marcus.
That is true. But
no,
there's
that's a type of Marcus.
Yeah,
the lay down Marcus.
Yeah, there's manic Marcus. There's depressive Marcus. There is drunk Marcus. There's angry Marcus. There's horny Marcus.
Ugh.
I don't like it. Is it all in that order? Is it always in that order?
I think it is.
Yeah. Manic, depressive, drunk, angry, horny.
All right. Well, you currently don't seem that manic, so you're depressive. So we've got to end this episode before he gets angry, because coming up after that, I got to get out of this room, Henry.
Yeah, before you get a horny Marcus, he's gonna go around. He's got his nipple hands.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, wait, you don't know. You guys are around horny Marcus a lot.
All right. Good God. You gotta change the way your brain works.
Get at you with my tweakers. Stop pulling your fingers, your tweakers.
So, after he sees the swastika, Admiral Byrd's plane was stopped in midair. The controls were rendered completely useless, and then the craft started softly floating alongside the flying discs. This is his next entry, 11:35 hours.
Our radio crackles and a voice comes through in English with what perhaps has a slight Nordic or German accent. The message is, Welcome, Admiral, to our domain. We shall land you in exactly 7 minutes. Relax, Admiral. You are in good hands. Please put your plate and trays in the proper position. We are close. Please stop using your headphones.
At 11:45 hours, he says,
I'm making a hasty last entry in the flight log. Several men are approaching on foot toward our aircraft. They are tall, with blonde hair. In the distance, a large, shimmering city, pulsating with rainbow hues of color. I do not know what is going to happen now, but I see no signs of weapons on those approaching. I hear now a voice ordering me by name to open the cargo door. I comply.
You know, it seems like a strange thing to do under pressure. Just start writing in your journal in real time.
Seems strange.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know, it's the same thing on Star Trek. Like, you know, on Next Generation,
on
when
the
they're...
scripted television show that
isn't
real?
Yeah, it's a fake show. That's a fake television show.
Yeah, but no, it's based in reality, though.
Oh.
A quote-unquote...
It's a quote-unquote show
based in reality, right?
Well, I agree with the reality that there is racism, and that's why Worf isn't the goddamn man in control.
No, Worf isn't the man in control because he can't control his emotions, and he's wrong most of the time.
Well, I always liked him very much.
Yeah.
Now, is Worf supposed to be space Spanish?
Possibly, but we don't. That hasn't
possibly
been confirmed.
And if you watch Deep Space Nine, sir, you will see that there is a black man in charge of the station.
Worf. Which, I'm not saying like, that Worf is black. He's a whole nother race. He's a whole nother.
But the
species.
Actor's black.
But we're talking about Worf.
I thought the actor was just painted brown.
No. Big black man.
Oh,
right. We have to end the conversation because you guys aren't capable of discussing Worf outside of racial context.
So the humanoids who stopped Admiral Byrd, they were, by Byrd's descriptions, closely resembling the Nordic alien race.
Well, making... He must have just went like, whew, when he saw them.
Yeah, that made them very close to who? The Aryans. They flew Byrd in ships they called Flugelrods to their leader, who called himself the Master. Mm-hmm. And he told Byrd that Byrd was in the domain of the Aryani, the inner world of the Earth.
Oh.
And he told Byrd that his job was to take a message to the government that atomic power was not meant for man. For this was soon after the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombings. Mm-hmm. And that humanity should cease their use of atomic power. Also, there's a subterranean race of giants developed thousands of years beyond your race. Hello.
So it seems like we need nuclear energy more than ever to go blow them up.
Yeah, go kill them. So you're saying we got to go kill them? That's what we got to do. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. You mean we got a bunch of free shit inside the Earth already? Let's go get it.
Let's get it.
Like, that's the problem. Have we learned nothing from the Native Americans at this point? Did they not get any word about what happens when Americans just show up to see a new place where there's a bunch of new fruit there and a bunch of people who don't believe in war? And you show up and be like, huh, that's so funny. Huh? These guys are so nice. Huh? I bet we could kill a bunch of them in like groups. Yeah.
I will say the Native Americans did have quite a few wars with themselves.
They did. They were not quite the peaceful people that the hippies would like them to be.
That's right.
I'm just going to say this. We killed them with blankets.
The Spanish did that.
Yeah, the Spanish did that.
We get blamed for so much of what the Spanish did, and I'm sick of it.
Yeah. You know what, Ben? You're right.
I'm going to say another thing the Americans did to the Spanish is that we took their culture and we made Chipotle. So I will say that. We took the Spanish's diarrhea-making power and we amplified it up to 150 times what they ever could do.
So after reporting to the Pentagon and the president what he learned about the people underneath the Earth, Byrd wrote this in his diary.
Now, just know I'm reading this in accordance to the font to which it is written.
Yes, and this is verbatim and also verfontum what was written in Admiral Byrd's diary. This is how he wrote it.
All right.
Verfontum. I am placed under strict control via the national security provisions of the United States of America. I am ordered to remain silent in regard to all that I have learned on behalf of humanity!
Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Exclamation point!
Well, I don't know why they didn't take him seriously. You gotta let that guy right into the front door of the White House.
No, in an interesting little epilogue to Robert Byrd's story, his son... Oh, you know what? Here's the funny thing. This entire time, we've been saying Robert Byrd. Robert Byrd was the racist senator.
Yeah, that's what I kept on. I would assume there's more people named Robert Byrd than one.
His name is Richard Byrd.
Richard Byrd.
Yeah,
okay.
But isn't it fun to think about Robert Byrd going to the Hollow Earth?
Oh, I do believe he's from it. Yeah.
So, Richard Byrd's son, Richard Byrd III, was found dead. Uh-oh. In an abandoned warehouse in Baltimore.
As are most people in Baltimore.
He was emaciated, covered in dirt, and missing a shoe.
That's heroin, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a Charlie Sheen thing. No, that sounds like a Charlie Sheen vacation.
So either he was walking and lost one shoe, and then just continued to wear the other one, or somebody stole a single shoe.
Oh, nothing I like better than a sleeping man with one shoe, because I'm going to take this one shoe away from him. I just like to see him sleeping there with this one shoe on. You know what I do? I get a little squirt into the top on that shoeless foot right there.
Crooked Jimmy.
Oh, man. I don't
know. Jimmy, stop jerking off on that one-shoed man.
Well, you know what was weird, though? Is that, you know, the last time he was seen?
When?
Traveling to Washington, D.C. to attend a ceremony honoring his father.
And he had one shoe.
Well, I think, because there's so many things to talk about, too. I also want to, like, put on, like, I think that the Richard Byrd story is the most interesting facts about Hollow Earth, because we're going to connect it right now deep into the heart of Nazi Germany. I want to again say, because we covered a lot with Dulce about the aliens living, I feel like that's already knowledge, that things that live inside this earth are aliens, and they've been here for a long time, and they populated us here. Right, Marks?
Absolutely.
Right, dog meat?
Yeah.
You're making him angry. And if he gets horny, I swear to God, we're ending this podcast.
So let's get to the Vril. In 1871, a few years before Jules Verne's quote-unquote novel, Journey to the Center of the Earth, a man named Edward Bulwer Lytton wrote in another quote-unquote novel called Vril, The Power of the Coming Race. Now, the story follows a narrator who encounters the Vril-Ya, a race of humans who fled the Great Flood, lost their way, and decided to stay in the caverns. Now, the narrator describes the Vril-Ya as having huge wings that reached to their knees, like Hawkman, that allowed them to fly through the various tunnels of their subterranean world. They wore bejeweled tiaras and carried silver scepters made of polished steel, which were powerful enough to carve through rock.
This is how also Republicans view the future gay hell that we'll all live in.
Sounds like a hell of a place to live in.
It sounds amazing.
It sounds pretty fun, yeah.
I want a scepter.
You'll get one. We can get you one. It's technically just a stick.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Technically, if anybody wants to make and send Ben a scepter, the address is The Creek in the Cave, care of Last Podcast on the Left, 1093 Jackson Avenue, Long
Island.
I would
say be careful, though. Don't send a weapon in the mail.
No, it's not a weapon. It's a scepter.
It's a scepter.
That would be 1093 Jackson Avenue, Long Island City, New York, 11101. Scepters for Ben.
And it would really mean a lot to me, and I'd use it every day.
Don't give him a scepter.
I should get a scepter.
Don't give him a scepter, because the last thing we need is for him to be able to be like, you stand there, and you stand there. That's what scepters
are for. Yeah, having him wrap it on the table.
Oh, it would be perfect.
So the Vril-Ya were masters of the Vril, which the Vril-Ya claimed was the source of power that pervaded the entire universe, enabling them to influence the minds and bodies of others, and also gave them the ability to manipulate the weather.
And it's also known as, or ki, that the Chinese say, or prana, that the Indians say.
Yeah, or the force, as George Lucas says.
Or nonsense, as Ben Gisel said right now.
And about the Vril, the quote-unquote narrator of this quote-unquote novel, he said,
I pray that ages may yet elapse before they emerge unto sunlight, our inevitable destroyers. I have thought it my duty to my fellow men to place on record these fair warnings of the coming race.
And that goes out to your fellow men?
Fellow men.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. And you know who was able to see through the lines here? Who was able to read through the lines? As I was saying, just like, you know, sometimes it's an occult, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
You know who answered this, hey, how are you?
Who?
Madame Helena Blavatsky.
God, I miss old saddlebags. Love seeing her out there.
She
got the body of Roseanne and the face of Abe Vigoda and the mind of Madame Helena Blavatsky.
Blavatsky.
She wrote about the mysterious power source in the book Isis Unveiled.
Sir E. Bulwer Lytton in his Coming Race describes it as the vril used by the subterranean populations and allowed his readers to take it for a fiction.
Yeah, you hear that?
Wow.
Allowed his readers to take it for a fiction. Now do you get it?
I got it. People read it. They didn't believe it.
No, they didn't
because
believe
the
it,
author
so
allowed them
to
take it as fiction. I see.
He allowed them to take it as fiction. Yeah.
He wasn't like livid with the fact that they didn't believe any of his ideas.
No,
he didn't understand. Yeah,
allowed them to take it as fiction
when they were laughing and reading the book, very similar to Tommy Wiseau, the director of The Room, who thought that he really made a classic masterpiece. Yeah.
You know what he said? I'll allow it.
He'll allow it. Yeah, he'll allow people to laugh at his work.
Yeah. Okay. He allowed it.
Because, of course,
like
that
we
is
do
it.
Here.
Yes.
Say we're a comedy podcast, but actually we're delivering very potent chunks of the truth, much like chunks of vitamin tablet inside of a bubble of water in a loser's basement.
Yes.
You know, of the believers that took the matters of Vril to heart, none were more ardent, more passionate, and more believing than a one Mr. Adolf Hitler.
And the one thing you'll say about him, the one thing he wasn't, was gullible.
So he was open-minded, yeah. Henry.
When it came to the hollow earth theory, I think that he was a little bit too open-minded.
That's the thing. So you think that, I guess Hitler was so open-minded that he was narrow-minded.
Yeah, he went full circle with this guy.
He came back around. Yeah. Really open-minded about some things, real closed-minded about others.
Mm-hmm.
But still kind of open-minded in being closed-minded.
Well, he was a painter.
Yeah. He believed in himself.
Kind of.
So let's get now to, speaking of Adolf Hitler, speaking of Nazis, let's talk about the Vril Society.
Now, the Vril Society was kind of the hot chick version of the Tula Society, correct?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this was the other side of it. The Thule Society was, you know, nerds like Heinrich Himmler, Dietrich Eckhart, you know, guys that, you know, big fat Hermann Göring. Like, these people were not attractive.
No, the wedgie boys. The boys that deserve multiple wedgies.
These are the severe white nerds we talked about in the Nazis and the occult episodes.
Yeah. The super white nerds. And this is something that this is actually, right now, this is an extension of our Nazi occult episode. This is something we really wanted to get to on that episode but didn't quite have time for. This is when we really get to talk about the Vril Society. And the Vril Society believes that the Aryans were not something that existed only in the past, but were in fact still living in the Earth's core.
Very convenient.
I will, on this next chunk of information, I will cite my source on this one. This did come from Stormfront.
But I will say this, is that it's definitely not, wink, 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 definitely not bookmarked on a Marcus's, need to check every day website.
I believe it
when you say that. You don't check Stormfront every day. I don't believe you have a username on Stormfront called Dogmeat477.
It's like people who listen to Howard Stern every day, you know?
Stormfront makes Alex Jones look like MSNBC. Stormfront's one of the worst .coms on the internet.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only go there for Nazi research.
That's the only reason to go there. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what they want you to be there for. That's the whole point of the website.
You say Nazi research, what they mean is Nazi appreciation. Kind of like how Pete Townsend said he was doing Naked Kid research instead of doing Naked Kid appreciation.
Yeah, exactly. Henry gets me. Too real.
I'm sad that I get you.
The lead singer of The Who, correct?
The guitarist of The Who.
Yeah, he's a pedophile.
Yeah. So. Except for what I'm doing isn't illegal. Not yet.
All right, so let's move on here.
Marcus, thought crimes, dog meat parts.
So one of the main characters involved in the Vril Society was a super hot Nazi named Maria Orsic.
Actually super hot.
She created her own little circle of friends within the society called the Alldeutsche Gesellschaft für Metaphysik.
Which just means all Germans for metaphysics.
Yeah.
Which is true.
And that was composed completely of young ladies who wore their hair in the horsetail style.
You know,
ponytail. That's what they mean. It's a ponytail. Horse. They kept saying horse tail, and it's not a horse tail.
Ponytail's different from, I mean, yeah, ponytail, horse tail, they're all horses, Henry.
Horse tail, if I told my girlfriend that her hair, I was like, oh, I love that horse tail you got going on there, I get punched in the stomach because it's horse tail. Saying to a woman that having a horse tail implies that you are 300 pounds.
That's very true. And women don't like to be compared to horses, believe it or not. They don't like the extended face.
Yeah, but ponies, they're fine
like
with ponies.
Face. They don't like the big legs. They don't like the concept of their breasts as udders.
Right, they don't. And I know this for a fact. My friend Dave, we were at a bar one time in college, and he called a girl Seabiscuit. And then he got punched in the face.
Oh, yeah.
But Seabiscuit, she didn't understand he was calling her a winner. But, you know.
Dave is the guy you shat on his couch, right?
No, I never did that. So Hollow Earth is more possible than what you just said. So let's just take that easy.
So the women of this, of the Vril Society, of the Vril Gestalt.
No, this is great. They really did. They believed that their ponytails acted as cosmic antennae to communicate with aliens.
Yeah.
Through this hairstyle.
Good,
all right, so Maria was able to communicate with ancient Sumerians to receive technical data from the construction of a circular flying machine.
Yeah, that's right. Through her cosmic antenna horsetail.
Of course.
So, and the other medium in this society, he was known only as Zigrun.
Zigrun is a woman.
Yeah, Zigrun is a woman. And much like Madonna, goes only by one name.
Okay.
Yeah. Zigrun translated the mental images into blueprints, although because of funding problems, construction on this disc machine would not begin until 3 years later.
Now, the Vril Society was also started by a man named Ruben von Subutendorf. There were two sides of the Vril Society. There was the dude side and there was the hot chick side.
Mm-hmm.
The dude side believed that they were going to go and try and find the substance called Vril. They believed that there was literally a goop called Vril that could control all reality deep in the center of the Earth.
Yes,
the
much
chicks
like
on the other side were doing the fucking talking to alien shit, trying to get all the plants for how to take us over to Antarctica, and it's all very complicated. And they also all fucked each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would
quite
say
a bit.
In this situation, I would identify as a woman. I would have to go with Caitlyn Jenner's route, become a woman, fully transition, because it sounds like the chicks had a lot more fun.
Yeah, dude, because they were the ones going up into space.
Right.
The dudes were going down into the earth.
Just coal mining. Just the coal miners of the situation.
Yeah, Henry says that it's real complicated. I don't think so. I'm going to explain it to you guys right now what these ladies were up to. See, in 1924, in November, Maria visited top Nazi Rudolf Hess in his apartment.
I remember when he won that reality show, America's Next Top Nazi.
America's Next Top Nazi, where it was just like, and they had that cool thing with the hot tub. That's like in a big place with the weird, like, you know, martini, like, lamps.
Mm-hmm.
In Rudolf Hess's apartment, Maria used her psychic powers to contact one of the founders of the Nazi Party, Dietrich Eckart, from beyond the grave, for Dietrich had died 1 year later. Now, although the party started with Eckart speaking through the young woman, Eckart soon gave the control of the young woman over to a strange voice who claimed that he was a part of the Sumi, who were dwellers of a distant world which orbits the star Aldebaran in the constellation that we call Taurus the Bull.
All right.
You there? You with me so far?
I'm totally with
you. Right.
Yeah.
So remember, there is an old German man speaking out of the mouth of a young, hot, blonde Nazi.
Right.
But also there's an alien in there.
Taurus, the bull.
No, Taurus.
No, the constellation is, that's where they live.
That's where they live.
Aldebaran was in the constellation of Taurus.
Yeah. No, they're the Sumi. Those are the ones, that's the aliens that speaking
out. Okay.
Yeah. So, of course, you may be asking right now how this race from the stars relates to what goes on in the Hollow Earth. Now, remember, in the quote-unquote novel Vril, the Power of the Coming Race, Bulwer Lytton claimed that the Vril-Ya were a race of humans who fled the Great Flood, lost their way, and decided to stay in the caverns, while the voice speaking through Dietrich Eckart's spirit out of Maria Orsic's mouth told the Nazis that the Sumi had briefly colonized Earth 500 million years ago, and millennia later, there came a great flood, which the Sumis called the Upnapishtim, known to us as the Flood of Noah, and the survivors of this flood, according to the Sumi, hid underground and eventually became the ancestors of the Aryans. Fuck you!
Fuck everybody.
Wow.
The other idea, too, is that, like, if you look at this, there's the... This corresponds to the less racist versions of these stories as well, with the terms of the Anunnaki, the Indian race, the Hindu belief, and the flying ships that were put in the Bhagavad-gita. There's like all of this shit kind of connects into each other onto the same shit. Also, Taurus the Bull was connected to a thing called the Lords of the Black Stone, which was a secret society that exists in Germanic times in early in the 1600s that were like a bunch of Teutonic guys that hung out, and they had a sigil that was a Taurus with wings on it. And what do we learn about things that with wings on it in ancient pictures? It denotes the fact that they were flying.
Yeah.
So we're looking at is the fact that there is maybe a Germanic connection to alien life through Aldebaran and the concept where they live. The Sumi have been talking to Germans for a long time, and they've wanted white people to live and win for like 900 years.
Yeah.
Check out Heroes on NBC next Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever.
So decades after this weird little psychic party in 1943, a secret plan was hatched by Maria Zigrun Heinrich Himmler and Hitler himself to use the seventh generation of the flying saucer that they built using the earlier Sumerian plans way back in 1922. This was called Vril 7, and they were going to use this ship to travel through a dimensional channel to the star Aldebaran, where the Aryans originated. But
Mama, I'm coming home. That's what that song is about, actually.
Yeah.
But the flight ended in failure when the ship returned badly damaged, looking as if it had been traveling for hundreds of years. Bad dimensional rift there.
Mm.
The Nazis would not make actual physical contact with the Vrilya until 1937, when on an expedition to the Antarctic, the Nazis found the South Pole hole. Now, but it's
nothing like that South Pole hole.
Love
the
South Pole.
The South Pole hole is the kind of hole you can't even forget, because it's the South Pole hole.
Yeah,
sounds like a strip club.
Now, as far as the fate of the Alldeutsche Gesellschaft für Metaphysik goes, the last letter sent out to their membership was a communication from Maria Orsic at the end of the war. It ended with the sentence, Niemand bleibt hier, meaning none is staying here. And since no one heard from any members of the Alldeutsche Gesellschaft für Metaphysik ever again, including Maria Orsic, it is possible that somewhere out there, near the star Aldebaran, there still lives today a colony of hot Nazi mystic women.
Ooh, get me on a spaceship. We're going to spaceship, get up there, listen to nothing but Rush. Get all the way up to fucking Aldebaran. I'm going to bring them, because you know what I bet they've never tasted? Margaritas. And I bet you, because there's nothing that drives a bunch of hot Nazis just fucking absolutely wiggity wild. It's a bunch of fresh, nicely made margaritas. Not for mix. I'm just talking about some ice, some lime juice, some good golden rum. You know what I mean? Yeah. Something nice. Yeah. Something good. Something classy.
Yeah.
Tequila.
Yeah. Triple sec.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't know how to make a margarita, Henry.
No, you did not make. You didn't bring them a margarita.
You got rum.
That's a
you
mojito.
Got Robitussin. Salt and pepper. Some soy sauce.
That's true.
Margarita.
Perfect.
So while Maria may have escaped certain death at the hands of the Russians through interstellar means, the majority of Nazis may have escaped into the Hollow Earth with the Aldebaran aliens who stayed behind. No,
I think that's just cold fact.
Yeah, that's...
I think we can all just say that that's cold
pretty
fact.
Yeah, it's cold fact because we know this from the research of the Hollow Research Society in Ontario, Canada.
Now, a thing called the Hollow Research Society would always be pretty objective.
Right. Yeah, because they're researching specifically hollow stuff.
Chocolate Easter bunnies there. Yeah. That's when I realized that life was bullshit. The first time, I'll never forget it. 6 years old, I thought I was getting a full chocolate bunny. Nothing inside.
And nothing's like the rage of a 6'5", 6-year-old. Just, I thought this was going to be full of chocolate.
And it's not.
Smash, smash, smash.
I didn't eat it.
Well, according to that society, more than 2,000 scientists from Germany and Italy, along with almost 1 million other Nazis, disappeared into the South Pole hole. Concerning our earlier claim that Operation High Jump was secretly a plot to kill Hitler, it's said that Operation High Jump was in fact that, but the reason why they needed so many men and ships and airplanes was that it was actually a battle between the Aryans of the Hollow Earth and the United States military. By the way, fellas, we lost.
I do not fucking believe that for a second.
We lost.
I think that we gave up because we were tired. We just were like, we're done with this. We don't need to deal with it. Let them have it. We didn't lose.
We lost the Hollow Earth to the Germans?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that if we wanted it, we would have had it, but I think we decided it smells down there or something. Yeah. Or there was like French fries became invisible down there and we couldn't. Yeah. We just can't use it. It just wasn't good for our needs.
Sure.
But also, this is saying, because the Aryans were fighting with their UFO flying disc technology at the same time, which would also possibly be energy crafts, which is also possibly the origin for all of the stories of the Foo Fighters during World War II and in the 1950s, and that every single UFO we've ever seen has been piloted by a Nazi crew, which connects to Betty and Barney Hill seeing the Nazi on the UFO.
Yeah. Think about it, Ben.
I've already thought about it. I can't agree more.
No, think about this.
How deep in the rabbit hole are we right now? How miles deep are we into the Hollow Earth?
I mean, I'm about to quote a 1964 book from a man named Raymond Bernard.
Pretty deep, then.
He claimed that flying saucers were not from outer space, but were rather from the Earth's core.
From the South Pole hole.
But there's also the North Pole hole. Remember, there's the mouth chakra and the butthole chakra, Ben.
The root.
The root chakra, yes. He argued this just made a lot more sense, right?
If we follow the logical conclusion of the claim made by Raymond Bernard in the Hollow Earth, that it is very probable, if not certain, that most, if not all, present-day UFOs are actually piloted and crewed by subterranean Nazis. The Antarctic Nazi underground Aryan connection, it doesn't end there, you fuckers. While some say Himmler was merely scouting, quote-unquote, scouting the South Pole for a possible boring old military base called Station 211, others claim that the Nazis were actually planning to build a colony there called New Berlin.
And so New Berlin would have been built atop a series of underground tunnels which connected to the prehistoric ruins of Kadath.
Kadath,
a city built by Atlantean settlers well over 100,000 years ago, and it is currently populated to this day by over 2 million non-Nazi Aryans, and it goes even further.
As we know, the Liebenstrom program, in which the Nazis kidnap women with Aryan features from conquered countries and place them in camps to breed with SS officers, actually fucking existed.
Yeah, because supposedly Heinrich Himmler extended this plan to a further division called the Antarktische Siedlungsfrauen, the Antarctic Settlement of Women, or the ASF. Training centers were set up in Estonia that were said to be combinations of a finishing school and boot camp where ladies would learn charm, etiquette, housekeeping, and polar fucking survival.
All right, Marcus is horny. Marcus is officially moving on to the horny phase.
Survival.
Ugh.
And
good God.
As far as real life verified proof of this claim, Nazi Navy Admiral Karl Donitz spoke.
Karl Donitz? Wait a second. Is his name Karl Donitz?
Karl Donitz, no, yeah. Karl Donitz here.
Not Donuts, because there's an umlaut over the O. So it's Karl Donitz.
It's Donitz. It's Karl Donitz.
I'm going to go to Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm going to go and be like, I will have 2 dozen Donuts.
Donuts.
He spoke, and this is historical fact. He spoke at the Nuremberg trials about, quote,
an invisible fortification of a paradise-like oasis in the mist of eternal ice. Also, we killed like 7 million Jews.
Yeah,
guys keep asking about the snow forts. Hitler was just so excited to build a snowman that could just actually be purely white. And it was just a bunch of men, and a bunch of us was just building snowmen for Hitler for months. We did that. But that's what you guys want to know about? Because I'll talk to you all about the fucking Christmas vacation place that Hitler wanted.
Yeah. It's a great way to distract from the horrors of the Holocaust.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, talk about the paradise-like oasis in the midst of eternal ice. And we may never know.
Mm-hmm.
If the Hollow Earth actually exists,
we do know. that it
we could know. We could definitely know because we could just go there if it's there. If it was there, we could fucking go with a camera. We have the most sophisticated cameras.
Yeah, I know. I know because that's the thing is that pictures from the hollow earth, from the earth about the top. There's just a big black hole up there, Ben.
All right.
Just a big black hole. And Admiral Byrd said that he could never actually fly over. A lot of pilots, I have read, I have actually listened to YouTube videos of people who have spoken to people who have spoken to pilots.
I know it.
And they say that you can't actually fly over the North Pole.
Right.
You have to fly around it.
So we
have... This is cold facts. This is cold facts.
Yeah.
The facts are... 1800s pamphlets. Mm-hmm. Those are cornerstone.
Yeah.
And then a chick channeling a Nazi from beyond the grave, but then went through another alien from the Taurus bull country.
Yeah. Through her horse tail.
Through her horse
tail. Ponytail.
Yeah. Horse tail.
Yeah, well, that's seal. That's solid. Yeah.
And also, don't forget about the secret diary from the retired senile Navy.
The diary that was marked secret diary, don't read.
And did you even think about the bubbles? Remember the bubbles with the bits of orange peel? Yeah.
The bubbles.
In them?
Yeah.
And testimony from Nuremberg.
Yeah. You know Dunkin' Donuts? I always thought for the longest time the guy's name was Duncan. And I thought it was Dunkin's Donuts. And then I just realized it's Dunkin' Donuts, like what you would do with coffee and a donut.
We're the prostitute cow.
Oh, I see.
We're the prostitute cow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Is that Hollow Earth?
That's Hollow Earth.
That's it. Wow, yeah,
unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's the entire storyline.
That's brilliant.
Thanks to Sammy Coughlin, as always, for her wonderful research, and thanks to Science Officer Megan Fierro-Root for her help on research as well.
What is her email? Can we give that out just in case so that if anybody has any problems with the scientific virilitude of this episode?
Or? I have not asked her if it is. She has agreed to be Science Officer and said that she did not know that she was even nominated. But okay.
That she has the job, she will take the responsibilities that come with the job.
I don't know if we want to give out this poor woman's email address right now.
No.
Because she's going to get a whole series of emails by around, later today and freak out.
Yeah.
And probably go to the police.
Yeah.
So I also have to make a correction. Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin did not do their heel face turn at SummerSlam. It was at WrestleMania 13.
Thank
you. So I want to make sure that I want to clarify that.
Also, Henry Spirowski is now down to 180 pounds, and Heroes Reborn will be on NBC September 24th at 8 p.m., so a week from today. So.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And follow us at LP on the left.
Follow Marcus Parks on Twitter at Marcus Parks. You can find Henry Zebrowski on Twitter at Henry Loves You, and I'm at Ben Kissel. I'm going to do Red Eye on the 24th as well at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and don't forget that our next live show is next Saturday, September 26th. We're going to be live streaming it again.
Awesome.
As we always do, check out the Facebook group for updates on where that link is going to be. You can also search for us on YouTube if you have some sort of weird aversion to Facebook. We'll also be announcing it on our Twitter as well. So that'll be starting at 11 p.m. Eastern this month rather than 10 p.m.
Awesome.
It's going to be a little bit later show this month. And go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch to get your Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt. We're almost sold out of the limited edition heart shirts. We've only got a few sizes left. So if you really want one of those, go and check it out. There's only a couple out there. And Heil Geen, everyone.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for listening to the shows here. Top Hat Roundtable, page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities. Really appreciate it here on CCR.
Hail Satan, use ritual to manipulate your reality to what you want it to be.
I'm going to say hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail me, please, if you would. That'd be great.
And we've got a Magustalations.
Magustalations, everyone.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.